woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him. I found my mind.
Well, we're back to the Starks and Jacks. I'm talking about Matt Weber teaching young white guy on the board over there. Looks like she's in control this morning. We'll see how she does. I think she's going to do fine. S&P futures up 21.75, kind of a mirror image of yesterday's down day. Dow futures up 194, NASDAQ futures up 75. Almost the exact numbers that we were down yesterday. Matter of fact, exactly, we were down, oh, we're down 285 in the Dow. Dow was down more because Boeing had a horrendous day. It was down like 12 bucks. S&P futures were down 20, so we've made that back. NASDAQ futures down 88, made most of that back. Kevin, how are you? Everything is good to go today because the Hong Kong leader says the extradition bill has been fully withdrawn. So there you go.
All right, so there we have it. Hey, you know, first of all, I have left you with a thoroughly confused assistant producer.
Really?
she picked up the phone, and I thought it was Jessica, so I immediately started giving her a hard time, and so she is probably scratching her head going, who the hell is this guy?
Well, that's all right. Save you giving Jay-Z, you know, grief for next time you see her.
I will do that. I should know better than to, I should just store it up. So so next time I'll give young Leica a hard time, you know, based on her being the right person. To
yes,
me, not the wrong person.
Well, Jay-Z, I've got her in the sights because she and her roommate both work over at Sirius a couple nights a week, so I get the stories from either one from the other one. So I'm always like a story ahead.
Stories about each one from
yes,
the other.
Yes, yes. Huh? The greatest last week was their place is infested with spiders. They found like five or six spiders, but they won't kill them, right? So they have to capture them. Or if they don't capture them, then they
let them go outside, yeah.
Yeah, and I said, why don't you just, my mom was the flip-flops those 50s and 60s ladies used to wear. When that thing came off, the spider was good as dead. So her idea was, if they come in the house, they sacrifice themselves. Outside, I leave them alone.
Yeah, nobody invited them in.
That's right. They were not...
Who the hell do they think they are?
That's right, those guys. And anyway, this thing in Hong Kong is wild. Because the person who runs the place, Carrie Lam, said she made a huge mistake by agreeing to that, and she withdrew it. So now I don't know if everybody's okay over there or what it is, but... certainly better than they were, I would say.
Well, if it backs people off, that's good. I don't know. I don't know how long it'll last.
Well, that bill, the idea was if somebody was in the legal system in Hong Kong, they could be extradited to the mainland for trial or something.
Torture and trial in that order.
Yeah. So now I guess you can't or something. But did you happen to see? Now, if you do the math, which I, you know, try and do, if you got about a 20-foot storm surge and your island is 10 or 12 feet above sea level, that's normally a problem. Did you see the pictures, satellite pictures of, like, some of those Bahamian islands before, during the storm surge when it was, like, nothing but ocean?
Yeah, it's shocking.
Yeah. And I was actually, we were in the Bahamas in 1991. We did a, get a load of this. This is how the world was different. Not 91. It was 2000 and right before the 2000 crash. So not 91. It was like 2000. So people were making so much money trading the dot bombs at the time. And so these guys had a seminar down in Bahamas, and these people paid, I'm going to say 65, 70 people, paid whatever it took to get to the Bahamas, and, you know, and paid for the seminar. We just went down, and the guy spoke a little bit, and Dan spoke about putting orders in and what you should expect from your broker and those kinds of things. So we weren't...
Dan was there to make sense.
Yeah. And we had, you know, some of our clients were there, so it was a meet and greet kind of thing. And, you know, I was lukewarm on the Bahamas. They had just had a hurricane, and there were areas where every single tree you drove by was down. I mean, it's, I don't know if they ever come back from the old hurricanes. I mean, how a tree makes it to be 40 years old, I don't know. I have no idea, because they get something there every few years, even if it's a small one, enough to knock trees down in the sand, basically. And, I don't know if I'd want to be, there's the Michael Jordan Bridge. What's the name of the place there with the big, what the hell's the name of it? The huge underground aquarium where you can actually see out into the ocean and stuff in Atlantis, where they've got the two towers, and there's a bridge between the two towers, like two-thirds, three-quarters of the way up. It's actually a suite, and it's the Michael Jordan suite. I don't think I want to be in that suite when a hurricane comes through there, because what if those two towers kind of go different directions, and that thing, you know, I'm sure it's engineered properly and attached properly, but I'm like, Kevin, I don't want to, I want no part of that thing when, if these towers start swaying. Just saying, you know, just
yeah,
saying
that,
is this.
That's when you, you check into a different room that day.
Yeah, that's a different, and, I don't know, I mean, the, what you do with your boats and everything else, I mean, you, If I know, and the Navy goes out to sea, like in the hurricane, or tries to get away from it, unless you want to be is near port, because a storm surge basically takes your ship, however big it is, and drops it on the land about a mile inland. Now, that's not what you want with your destroyers and cruisers. You try and get them out if they can move. otherwise, you know, it's a problem, like a major problem. So I don't know. I hope those people. I don't know what happens to them, but it doesn't look so hot.
Well, you know, I think the next thing is we need to get some hospital ships down there, and you know, some of those kinds of naval attachments that and Lou can probably speak to that a lot more than you know. So you ask him about it tomorrow. But you know, there's a process they go through. They're, the government of the Bahamas will ask for assistance, and then. When granted, then we dispatch all kinds of, you know, military vessels and things down there to help out, because God knows they need it.
Yeah, I often wondered. I mean, I know it would take a lot to redo it. Of course, I like old things, but the SS United States is just sitting there basically rusting in the Philadelphia yard. And I know there's issues with the ship, but I'd sure like to see that thing. Retrofitted as some type of a hospital type ship where you could, you know, when this stuff does happen.
Well, but they have those, Tom.
Not
they're,
that big.
Yeah. Those exist anyway, so, you know, that's what'll be dispatched. It's one of the ships that will be dispatched.
You know what the big issue with that ship is? Why nobody has been able to get it back going?
Nope, what?
The guy who built it, I don't know if he was in a fire or something, Kevin, but he was absolutely thought the most dangerous thing ever on ships was fire. So the only thing, guess what the only thing wood in the entire ship is?
The steering.
They
don't call it a steering wheel.
No, it's what the hell's the name of it? Anyway, the keys on the piano.
Oh, interesting. Not ivory, huh?
Well, the piano, I guess the piano itself.
Oh, okay.
And so there's massive amounts of asbestos on there. And I guess someday there'll be, you know, maybe somebody will get the ability to just, like, spray it and cover it. Because if it's covered, you don't disturb it. you know, it's sort of okay, but how do you redo a whole ship without having to, you know, without disturbing it? So that's, I think that's mostly the issue. Because the thing was naval specs, where it could keep up with, like, destroyers and stuff. It was one of the first things that was a combination of, the Navy gave them essentially a few bucks and they built it and said, if you build it to these specs, we'll give you some, because if we need it in wartime, we'll just take it. The company said, okay, but I think the thing, didn't it make it across the North Atlantic in like 3.5-4 days or something? Still is the record crossing by far, I think, but, you know, and sort of interesting stuff. I ran into one of my buddies last night. It was a business meeting, and part of it had nothing to do with me, so I kind of wandered away. I was talking to my 70-year-old architect friend who's been involved in buildings in every state. And, boy, I got to get him on the show, Kevin. Boy, what an amazing amount of knowledge, different industries and so forth. He did tell me that virtually all the people that are supplying metal and all kinds of stuff to the architectural and, well, building industry, he says there's been a pretty dramatic slowdown in the last few months. So I don't know where that drink. So you have to be careful when you can't just say, gee, IBM's slowing down, I'll sell IBM. Because you're not the only person reading the news. Matter of fact, there's people whose livelihood might just be to just watch IBM. So, you can say that, by the way, with the supply numbers yesterday, that the economy appears to be slowing. It doesn't mean that it's not already in the market, or you're the first person who got the memo. So, I mean, the market could be already priced for maybe a flat period here, maybe down a little bit, and it could already be priced there. The thing that makes it more difficult is what the Fed is doing. I mean, it's really difficult, Kevin, to try and figure out what that wild card is. And the wild card is, I've never seen anything quite like this. So, you know, and you can take this any direction you want too. You can say, what is the Fed seeing that I'm not seeing? Why are they doing what they're doing? That's a possibility. If you think they're not paying attention to the big bazoo in chief, or they could be being intimidated. I mean, I don't know so you don't really know. I mean, that's the problem when you're trading, is you're trying to keep yourself.
Tom, you don't know what's driving them, but hasn't the Fed been fairly predictable?
I would say,
in the short run, I couldn't tell you what they're going to do next year, but don't people generally seem to have a pretty good idea of what they're going to do next meeting, the one
if you
meeting
zero,
after, et cetera?
If you zero in on the announcements at the meeting, and that's your only table, but if you look at the growth in M2 in the last 3 months at 9.1%, unless you look at that, you would never even begin to think they're doing that. And that's an incredible number. And I'm thinking it's higher than any time since 2008. Now you can look at it and say, is there such an amazing contraction they think that's going to happen that they need to pump stuff in there? This is away from pressure from the White House. I mean, that number is pretty darn high. Now how are they even getting there? I mean, what are they buying? How much more are they piling in? Are they buying, virtually every piece of some of our, I mean, their balance sheet has to be going up again. I mean, these are dramatic numbers. I mean, the monetary theory would have you say that the best you can really grow real term at this stage of a country's life, 3-3.5%. So the Fed's job is to monitor the money supply, make sure it grows, so you're not dragging or you're not pushing. If you look at the next 13 weeks, it's 8.3. M1 is 10. Nobody really looks at M1 anymore because that's just checking accounts and stuff. But I mean, when you start talking about numbers like that, if your growth is 2, you're pushing 7% more money into the system than is being used. Because in theory, if the economy grows 3%, if the money supply grows 3%, you're neither inflationary or deflationary. You're right on the bubble. If you want to be a little more, like some people seem to think, you want to be a little more to the upside of that, if you want to be like 3.5%. But I don't think anybody anywhere says when you got an economy that's growing 2% without any seeming capital constraints whatsoever, that there's not enough money in the system, that all of a sudden you're going to grow by 9. To me, I mean, it's absolutely a shameless effort to keep asset prices up, which, you know, doesn't really affect every man so much anyway. But we're starting to see, I mean, everywhere I'm starting to see even housing prices at least flatten out. And some of the bigger areas up on the north side where there's $1.5 million houses, you can't give one of those away. A lot of that is, some of that's demographics. I mean, young people like the Maddie Weber new family come March when he's getting married. The last thing they want is a 15-room house.
Are you making an announcement?
Well, he made it.
I know that part of the announcement.
Yeah, but he...
Say the Maddie Weber new family.
Well, no, that's not happening yet.
Okay.
But I'm saying, the last thing Maddie wants, he's not the handiest man on earth, is a 15-room house on 5 acres. I mean, it's just, it's not what a $50,000 tax bill. I mean, it's less and less people want that. Maybe at some point...
You can buy a small house in Chicago and get that tax
bill. Right, get that tax bill, too. And, so when you look at, what is going on, I mean, are we going to do whatever we have to do to keep stock prices up? Now, why is that? I mean, obviously nobody wants the market to crash. I sure don't. I got people that are long stock, and I'm long stock. So nobody wants that, but do you also want something that's artificial? You know, do you want to go right back into Goodhart's law? I mean, do you want, just because the 1% of the people in the country own 90% of the assets, is the goal of the Federal Reserve to keep asset prices up and don't care whether you inflate the hell out of the place for other people? I mean,
how much does keeping the asset prices up affect the capital investment, the business investment? I'm thinking very little. But
what do you mean by, a hugely dropping stock market is not the best thing in the world for IPOs.
Right. Well, you don't want to cut into, anything that resembles the, for lack of a better word, the cash balance of a corporation. If you want investment, and I thought I saw a number that capital expenditures actually were up recently, but
I've seen
quote the source.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that because Kevin, the part that I think it's, what was it, William Simon, the book A Time for Truth. I mean, I think you and I and Lou and everybody else who come on the show and we try and do is point out, it's not so much policy. Because I don't really know. I mean, if you put me in the Oval Office tomorrow, I'm not so sure where I'd start. Because there's a lot of things that I think are wrong and that are underreported. And I'm not sure what the first thing you do first. It's like, only a really trained doctor in an emergency room situation, if somebody like falls off a cliff, says, oh no, leave the legs, leave the arms, let's work here first. I mean, we'll get to that later. I mean, there's a process in there to take somebody a lot smarter than me to say, out of the 20 bills I need to pass, this needs to be one, this needs to be two, this needs to be three. I always had an amazing jealousy for people. You know, the guys who designed like the side of the railroad car or the undercarriage, the undercar arrangement drawing, which really is the key drawing in the whole railroad car. For the guys that did that, that was a skill set, but I'm thinking, I could learn that. I mean, I know that there's a, need an air conditioner, you need this, you need that. The guys that always really, I was jealous the hell out of were the manufacturing engineers, where you'd look at a whole building and you'd say, or a whole railroad car and you'd say, all right, first thing you do is take these two parts, screw them together with this screw. And then the next thing is this, then the next thing. And all of a sudden, the picture that's on the paper comes alive. I think that sometimes is the hardest thing to do. They're not necessarily theoreticians. They're not guys that told you all the million parts that had to be on the railroad car. They just said, okay, here they are. Here's how they all go together if you want the thing to run. And it's people have never been in a factory or a design build kind of situation. It's a totally different skill set. And it's one that I'm sitting there going, I would never know what to do first. Right.
Well, if you're sitting in a turnaround situation, it's first what's bleeding. So
right.
Stop the bleeding. I mean that's like first thing you do is you say, what's bleeding? Well, let's deal with that. Let's make it stop. The second thing that you do then is you start picking off the easiest wins you can get. So if you had to go in the political world, that's you'd need to be doing the same things. bleeding. I don't know. I mean, certainly if you walk into a wartime situation or things going on a battlefield, then that would be your first priority. But after that, then you just start saying, okay, where can I win?
Well,
pick fights you don't need to pick right away.
I'm a little more. I'm before you. You're already past me. What I'm saying is, I don't even think that the people around. How can I put this lightly? When I listen to CNBC and some of the other ones all day long, because I like listening to John and Pete and those guys, and I like Guy Adami, and these are friends of John's, and I've met some of them, and they're good people, and they're not dummies at all. I mean, they're absolutely not dummies. But somehow, Kevin, they have gotten themselves tied up into the, even without knowing it, they're tied up into the entertainment piece of business news or economic news, and I can't get myself in there. I can't have. It must have been 20 people yesterday, some way or another, saying that the consumer is our only hope. The consumer is driving the expansion. Even if the corporate stuff goes downhill, investment, the consumer so far is carrying us. And as long, Kevin, I think that's all BS. I mean, I look at the. It's not that I don't want it to happen, but I look at the numbers. And when you're telling me what people are, when I know I'm seeing what people are making and when they're increasing, and I see a month where they go 0.6% higher on retail sales, and I know they made 0.1% more, or 0.2 or 0.3, if you average it out. I don't know that something going on a credit card, the idea that people somehow into our vernacular, and I mean, you and I are just too old to ever believe this way, I guess is what it is, into our vernacular, you and I thinking that somebody hopes next year might be better, or even if he doesn't, realizes his kid, if he's going to school, has got to have the laptop, he's got to have something, he's got to look halfway decent, who throws it on the credit card even though his hand shakes when he does it. I don't think that's positive. But other people are absolutely convinced that person's positive on the economy, even if they don't have the money, it's a good thing. And I, you know, buying the car for $31,000 and getting a loan for $29,800, I absolutely question whether the guy even bought the damn thing, really. And I question, what are we doing here? I mean, so the numbers that people are tossing around, I could not even get in a room with these people and say, this is an issue. You can't count on a consumer because it's all going into debt. I mean, and yet they would say, what are you talking about? The guy feels good about next year. That's why his credit card's going up 5% a year, which they are. I mean, if you take the amount of money that the government is borrowing, which is, you know, whatever, it's $1 trillion a year, which is roughly 4.5% of GDP. If you pull that out of the GDP, you got no growth, Kevin. Now, some of that, obviously, you're borrowing it from somebody. Okay, the extent that you're borrowing it from somebody, all right, now that person's spending less, so it's not all negative, okay? But the extent that the Federal Reserve is making up the money and buying it from you, which is probably 25-30% of the debt, okay, that's, then all of a sudden now you just made up money and spent it. I mean, that's not growth. Somebody's credit card every year gets higher and higher and higher. I refuse to believe that's growth either, Kevin. I just come from a different area, and I think you're sort of with me on this.
Well, yeah. There's revenue growth is not the same thing as balance sheet improvement. I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah. And the idea that the consumer spending, and to be honest, if you are, in power, whether you're, I keep, you know, pushing at the president, but if you're in power, if you keep promising people and keep telling people everything's going to be better, go out and spend at 25% you're paying on income or the juice. I don't know. I think it's almost, you know, bad. I mean, everything's great. Our credit card debt went up. Okay. Last year, revolving credit was up 5.3%, Kevin. It's a lot. Revolving is credit card, right? Non-revolving is installment loans. Is that when I get this right? So, you know, you work for a bank.
Yeah, anything that's a line of credit, however you want to put it. So it could be a home equity as well, I would think.
Right, home equity as well.
I don't know if they classify that as mortgage money or if they classify that as revolving.
Actually, revolving. I read that yesterday. S&P futures up 22, Dow futures up 193, NASDAQ futures up 72. So far, we're taking back most of yesterday's loss. We'll see if that holds. It'll be nice. I got calls to sell that I didn't sell Friday night, so I'll be happy if we're up here at least for a little while. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now, right now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Angelica Vlasenko on the board, along with Mr. Matt Weber. Kevin, just because you gave her a bunch of crap, she was accused you of being David. Just saying. It's starting to go both ways, sounds to me. S&P futures up 24 now. NASDAQ futures up 78. Dow up 201 over in Europe. We've got rallies here as well. DAX up 114. 1.1%. Oh, no, that's a full 1%, sorry. FTSE up 24. laggard there, 0.3%, is those guys are fighting big time on whether or not, apparently it's not so easy to disband Parliament. They came back one day and were voting to, like, for a new government, a new election. So Boris has got himself a handful in his day one. He's up, basically up to his behind in alligators in his first week. Kakarana up 57, that's a full percent. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei up 23, that's only 0.1%. Shanghai up 27.9%, but here's the big one, as the Hong Kong situation seems to have ratcheted down dramatically, with Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam, is her name, says that the extradition bill has been fully withdrawn, so I don't think they really do much in the way. Now, demonstrators wanted some other stuff as well, but I think this is going to diffuse most of that. It's one man's opinion. Anyway, Hang Seng up 9.95, that's 3.9%. Bonds, 1.49, up a little bit, but still under 1.5, but I'd never see that. Bund, 0.63, so the Bund has actually come back from 0.71, so that's a pretty big move. It's almost 10 basis points back in the Bund toward even. Japan, minus 0.29. Oil, we've got up 71 cents, 54.65. Oil is just stuck right here in his range. Oil service companies, oil companies, basically getting their behind kicked all over the market. The XLE is way down. We've got Schlumberger, 31.93. It was like 70 a couple of years ago, 18 months ago. Brent up 58 cents. Natural gas up 2 cents, 238. So I'm thinking that day we said maybe 221 was a low, or 222. Maybe we were right. Wow. Be right once in a while, at least for a little while. Gold down 10 bucks, was up huge yesterday. Silver still up another 14 cents, 1938. There's no stopping the silver. I mean, even when gold pauses, silver does not. And we have copper up 4 cents, 255, the first move at all. But maybe something's breaking a little bit better over in China. After that long-winded thing, there's all kinds of stuff going on. Which one of you guys is doing traffic, weather, sports?
Coming up on 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start on the area expressways. Our only issue right now is downtown. Columbus Drive is closed due to an accident on the northbound side between Monroe and Randolph. Northbound lower level of Columbus is blocked at Randolph due to that crash. All traffic is sharing the southbound lanes. That happened a little bit earlier this morning, and it's still affecting downtown traffic, so keep that in mind. But if you're coming in on the Edens or Kennedy, no issues to report. Normal traffic volumes on the Eisenhower and Stevenson as well. Southside expressways are looking good. Off the expressways, there's a crash at 95th and Stony Island Avenue on the south side. And then just west of there at East 142nd and South Indiana Avenue, there is a crash as well. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be a mild but very pleasant day. Cool at the lakefront. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 67. Right now it's crystal clear and 63 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, almost double that. Partly cloudy with a high of 111 today. Right now it's clear and 89. In sports, the Cubs keep winning. Unfortunately, the Cardinals do too. Cubs took care of the Mariners last night 6-1. Ben Zobrist returned and batted leadoff. He was on base three times. Made a couple of nice defensive plays as well. Wilson Contreras returned too and hit a bomb home run, and then just missed another three-run shot that just went foul left of the left field foul pole. So both guys, to say the least, made an impact when they returned. Chris Bryant and Javier Baez did not play. They're both day-to-day, nursing some nagging injuries. White Sox came from behind and beat the Indians last night in Cleveland 6-5. Sox were trailing 5-2 late in that one, rallied with a four-run eighth inning to top the Tribe. Diamondbacks are playing good ball. They keep winning as well. They doubled up the Padres 2-1. So the Cubs remain three games behind the Cardinals in the NL Central. As the Cardinals continue to win, the Cardinals are just red hot right now, and they're playing a kind of an easier part of their schedule, and they're taking care of business to their credit. Cubs are 3.5 behind the Nationals for the number one wild card spot, and they're still 2.5 up on Philadelphia. Chief.
Did you, you forgot about the Bears tonight?
The Bears are tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, sorry.
So I didn't forget about them.
No, you didn't. But you did forget about the Nationals game last night.
What about it?
See, this is back when you weren't doing your fantasy football pools, you used to know all this stuff.
Well, I know they won.
There was some, kick it up because it's so bizarre, I can't even remember. Something about the Washington was leading going into the top of the ninth inning, and a Mets score of 5 in the top of the ninth, and with only, there not even were two outs, the Nationals score 7 in the bottom of the ninth and win.
Yeah, the headline is Nats down 6 in the ninth, stun Mets in wild walk-off.
But there was only one out. We didn't even have two outs, and they had seven runs in.
That's unbelievable. Wow, that's a horrific loss by the Mets, who are clinging to slim wild card hopes.
They were talking last night about the whose bullpen is worse. They both were horrible. They both have the terrific starting pitching, but after that, they got you and me and Kevin.
Yeah, the Phillies are 2.5 back of the Cubs for that second spot. The Diamondbacks, who have won 2 in a row and 8 out of 10, leapfrogged the Brewers and the Mets, and the Diamondbacks are now 3.5 back, 1 back of Philadelphia. So if they can, the Diamondbacks can keep winning, they may be the Cubs' thorn in the side and not the Phillies. The Mets are now 5 back after that loss of the Cubs for that second wild card spot. So that really, really hurt them.
Well, yeah, because they were playing the Nationals.
That was a big game.
But I can't. So there's 12 runs in the ninth inning.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It maybe could have been more. It walked off.
Well, I'm pulling up the Cardinals schedule here real quick before you go back to Kevin, just because I'm just. I know. I mean, everyone kind of plays the same teams, so you know it all evens out in the end. But they've just been on a stretch where they're playing really bad teams.
Well, we're playing the Cubs 7 more times.
So. I know. So it's like, you know, they played 5 against the Reds, 4 against the Giants. They've only lost 1 in this stretch so far. Then they have 3 against the Pirates, who are horrible. 3 against the Rockies, who are horrible. So it's like a 20-game stretch where they're just playing teams that are well below 500. And they're, I mean, to their credit, like I said, they're winning these games. And they're winning them all like 3-2, 4-3, 3-1, 1-0. It's just like they're just scoring just enough runs, getting great pitching, and they're winning.
I would bet, but I'm not sure, I would bet a small amount, that if you put the two records of the two teams up against the Reds, you'll find out the difference in the games ahead of the Cardinals.
Yeah, the Cubs have struggled against the Reds, and the Cardinals have not. The good news for the Cubs is that after September 12th, when they wrap up this stretch against really bad teams, finishing with the Rockies, they do have to play the Brewers for 3, the Nationals for 3, the Cubs for 7, and the Diamondbacks for 3. So those are all, you know, potential playoff teams, or at least above 500 teams. And so we'll see if the Cardinals, what they do in that stretch.
Well, after the two horrible games this weekend, the Cubs were nice to chomp on Seattle.
Oh, yeah. They got nobody. To get two games against Seattle was huge, and it hopefully got the Cubs out of their slump. Kevin, did you watch the game last night?
I watched some of it. And, yeah, it was good to see. You know, we talked about this, I think it was last week, is it's just good to see guys go get good at bats for them.
Well, you brought up earlier, like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, how much they miss Zobrist. And, it was just one game last night, but him at the top of the lineup, every at bat, he worked a deep count. He gets a bunt hit. He walks twice. And he makes every play at second base, and it was like he never missed a beat, and it made the lineup so much better.
Yeah, you're always going to have a couple guys in your lineup that I don't want to say are easy outs, because they might actually do a lot for you, but you know, guys that are just not disciplined hitters, that don't work counts well, that don't, you know, whatever, and when that's 4 and not 2, that. You know, your lineup can look really, really bad for long stretches of time. And, you know, another way to look at it is, you know, you have these games when you strike out 12 times. Well, what have you done? You've given, like, 4 innings worth of outs without even putting the ball in play.
Well, the dramatic statistic that Mr. Weber dug up last year, but now you must have, like, passed it around because everybody's got it, the idea that a team could score in the upper tier of baseball and runs scored, and also be in the lower tier in baseball in games where they scored less than 2 runs. They just got 4 or 5 guys that are, they're very similar hitters. And they either all have a big day or they all have a crummy day. I mean, not all the time, but I mean, this weekend, Kevin, somehow or another, I was reading, I thought they screwed up on the Ernie Banks stats this weekend, so of course I had to look them up. They put something up there about people that had more than 30 home run seasons, that, so 3 or 4 was like the record. I'm going, Bernie Banks had more than that. Turns out he had 7, so I don't know if they went, well, I must have read the thing wrong. But, you're going back and you're saying the years that the guy had 40 some home runs, he's got 50 strikeouts or 60. You're going, I mean, this concept that a marginal hitter takes a full swing at a, you know, one in the dirt on strike 3, you're like, what are we doing? I mean, it's just,
Or a good hitter takes a full swing at a strike in the dirt on the first pitch.
Yeah.
and immediately puts himself behind in the count because, you know, essentially the guy made up his mind that he was going to go up there and go for the downs on the first pitch. And, you know, that's just bad. It's bad baseball. And the contrast really stood out when the Cubs played the Nationals because, it was painful at times because it was against the Cubs, but watching the Nationals go through their lineup and watching their guys, I mean, you get a guy like Rendon, who is a terrific hitter, and he's a really, really disciplined hitter.
Yeah.
These guys will, you know, they'll shorten the swing, take the base hit, when it's an RBI situation, they'll take a bigger swing in the right spots, but they don't chase a lot of crap, and it just drives me nuts. I think I've said this on the show before, but I've definitely said it in class. There's only two things in the world that really, really offend. Well, there's more than two, but two things in the world that really offend me terribly. One of them's bad management, and the other one's bad baseball.
What do you think of Russell coming in a sport coat and not a cardigan?
Elbow patches.
He looks good.
It's because they don't make cardigan sport coats.
Nah, elbow patches. I'm trying something new.
Oh, God.
All right. Yeah. I've been thinking of going with that. The total professor look.
We will talk.
I might have to smoke a pipe, though.
I got a guy who does corduroy and elbow patches in multiple colors to match my colored glasses.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I have no idea what you guys were talking about.
One of those, like patchwork pants or something like that?
No, I'm not going that far. Although I'm getting out my bright red Sansa belt because I did grow up a Cardinals fan.
It wouldn't surprise me.
They haven't lost, it seems like, in 2 months. So
I know.
Hopefully if you start wearing a red belt, that'll turn them around.
It's going to turn it around. No, it's a white belt with the red Sansa belt. It's keeping it straight, man.
Sorry.
Yeah, you got to understand what Sam's belt is, Matt.
Yeah, meaning no belt.
A man of a certain age wears those.
Oh, God.
My age.
By the way, get your iced coffee. We got one for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, Kevin, it's when you watch this, it is sort of a different brand, but you do see the Cubs, they all either sort of go down or they all, plus they don't really run that well, and it's station-to-station baseball, so they have the same issue.
It's incorrect.
You don't think?
Yeah, I don't think that's true either.
They take more extra bases.
They have
than
some really, really good base runners. So yes, there's always a few guys who are going to be more station to station. But you go through their lineup, and Baez is a great base runner, and Bryant is a terrific base runner, and Contreras is. And
I've been impressed with Castellanos. Obviously, he's been red hot with the bat since he's come here, but he had a reputation of being bad defensively, of not necessarily being able to hit righties as well as he hits lefties, didn't know anything about his base running. Basically, I like every single thing about the guy. I think he runs the bases hard.
You're right. His reputation was that he was a bad outfielder, and while I haven't seen anything that tells me he's a terrific outfielder, he hasn't been bad.
No, he's made every play. He's got a strong arm. He runs the bases really well. I mean, big strides, similar to Chris Bryant. Guy's hitting everything for power. He brings like a certain swagger and confidence to the lineup. You can bat him anywhere near the top of the lineup. I mean, he's been incredible. And last night he drives in four more runs.
Why would you listen to the press for baseball anymore than you would the press for finance?
Well, that's a good point.
That is a good
point. Or politics.
And it really does show too the effect that a ballpark has on a player, because he was playing in a ballpark that is not hitter friendly, and a lot of his warning track fly balls that were outs in Detroit have come to Wrigley, and they're three rows deep, and the guy is he's riding that wave.
But there was who was the famous famous? I mean, he was a good ball player I knew him at the time, and some guy was a second baseman on some team. And somehow the left fielder got hurt or whatever. And the manager says, hey, anybody here play a lot of outfield? And the guy went to raise his hand, and the guy next to him held his hand down. He goes, don't ever tell him you can play outfield. If you do, you'll be a journeyman the rest of your life. You'll lose your spot, and you'll be a journeyman. And so put another guy at second, and you'll fill in here, you'll fill in there. Don't ever tell anybody. This is now, of course, people play a lot of different positions, but the guy came here, I absolutely could not believe how well he's played. And what has he done wrong? I mean, and plus he seems to be, everybody likes the guy, on top of everything else.
Yeah. By the way, Joe writes in, Chief, the stats you were seeing were for left-handed Cubs hitters. I had a feeling that you had that wrong.
I probably did.
So Ernie Banks, obviously, not a left-handed Cubs hitter.
No,
so he would not be on that list.
Billy Williams only had three.
I don't know. I'd have to look.
Yeah, it's well, he was not a major home
considering
runner.
You got the major part of the stat wrong. I doubt you have the Billy Williams part right either. So
why don't you look?
Yeah, although I do think Billy Williams had some seasons when he was in the 40s.
Yeah, I do too.
One or two, maybe.
Don't anywho. So Kevin, you sent me this.
Why God created baseball reference?
Yeah,
Billy Williams hit 33 in 64, 34 in 65, 30 in 68, 42 in 70. 37 and 72. Those were the years he was above 30 home runs.
Okay, that's five.
So it was 37. And 70, he had an MVP season in there when he didn't make the All-Star team.
Right.
Yeah, in 70, it says he was second in the MVP award.
When did he win? Was it 71 or something?
He won the MVP in 69. Wait, no, that's incorrect.
No, I don't think
he did. MVP 23. I don't know if he ever won one.
I think he did.
No, I mean,
I thought he did, but I'd have to look it up.
It looks to me that in 70 and in 72, he finished second in MVP voting both times. But it doesn't look like he won one, as far as I can tell.
Okay.
All right. Well, Matty, you're right there on that.
Heck of a ball player.
He did win Rookie of the Year.
He had the swing for sure. But it's funny how he, these guys are so matter of fact, these old dudes. They asked him in a big interview about his batting one day, and he goes, well, you know, the difference is I learned even when I was a very young hitter that I had the ability to watch the ball, that my swing was quick enough that I could watch the ball an extra, you know, 4 inches from most guys. And that gave me a huge advantage on picking up the spin coming in. And he goes, because my swing was just a little quicker. But he didn't say that maybe he hit it further. He said it means I could wait on the ball just a little bit more than most people. And Ernie Banks said that his vision was such that if he didn't pick the spin on the ball up, was an unusual pitcher, if he couldn't pick the spin up within about 5 feet after it left the pitcher's hand. I mean, I don't think any of us could even begin. I mean, when I played hardball, if I could pick it up by the time it got to me, I was doing pretty good, let alone, you know.
Well, and I think that's underrated. When you talk about athleticism, you know, you look at speed, you look at, jumping ability, you look at, you know, reflexes. But you know what? We don't look at eyesight the same way. We don't look at, in basketball, I think, and hockey too, peripheral vision is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, that if you just have a wider field of vision, you're going to feel, almost feel things. You know, it's not, you may not have the kind of vivid look at something, but you feel the, in your field of vision, some of the guys coming from different directions and react to it. And I think those are underrated athletic gifts.
When I used to play basketball at my level, you know, we were 4 or 5 days a week. You got a sense around you of where everybody was. And all of a sudden I started playing like once in a while, and then I didn't play at all, and somebody asked me if, you know, to fill in for somebody. That left me more than anything else. I could probably still shoot as good as I ever could, but you lose your field of vision. You have no idea what people are doing around you. And it's the ninjas have a word for that. If you ever read any Eric Lustbader stuff, it's called Heron Guy. It's an awareness that's of around you that is even bigger than your field of vision you're talking about, Kevin. And by the way, Russell will love this. Your evil twin, Beldo. One day we were talking about Ted Williams. Well, you know, arguably, you know, because he was tested in the Army and everything, he had like the best vision of like anybody. He had Chuck Yeager vision. And it's when he was in the Air Force, where they used to train down in where's the Panhandle in Florida down there?
Pensacola.
That they used to have target things out there for guys shooting, you know, the machine guns through when they were learning how to fly. And evidently, I don't know, afterward, whether, you know, he stopped using those same kind of planes, he still holds all the records as a pilot.
Wow.
So it wasn't, the vision just wasn't just good at the ball field, it was good everywhere, type of thing.
By the way, Chief, real quick, only because I have the Cubs baseball reference page pulled up because I was looking at Billy Williams stuff. According to WAR, wins above replacement, which is sort of the stat most people use to measure a player's overall value.
If I only knew what that meant, but yes, go ahead.
The best Cub of all time is Cap Anson, who played a long time ago. He's even got the big handlebar mustache. But taking it to a more modern era, I would say, you know, the last, we'll call it 60 years, who is the best Cub of all time, according to WAR?
Boy, I don't think it would...
Now, the modern guys haven't played their whole career yet, so they don't count. So it wouldn't
Well, because of the gold gloves and stuff, I'm almost wondering if it isn't Rhino.
It wouldn't be Bryant or Rizzo or guys like that because they haven't played long enough yet. So it's these are guys that are retired, and think about guys that played either most or all of their career with the Cubs.
I know when that stat first came out, the people who came up with it were appalled that Santa wasn't in the Hall of Fame.
So Sandberg is a really good guess.
Maddox.
And he would be behind, you know, so Anson's the best.
Okay.
Sandberg's the third best. So there's one guy, and Chief just mentioned him.
Ron Santo?
It's Ron Santo. Ron Santo is the best Cub of all time, according to WAR.
Oh, jeez.
In the modern era, outside the last 60 years. 72.1 career WAR.
You know why he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Better than... Well, he is in the Hall of Fame now.
Yeah. Well,
waited until he died.
What the problem was.
Yeah.
He wasn't very popular with the other players,
which is insane. But yeah, so it's Santo, then Sandberg, then Banks, then Williams, and then Gabby Hartnett, then Sosa, then Fergie.
Fergie had a Maddox, huh?
Yeah, Maddox. I don't know if Maddox.
If it's Cubs career WAR, Maddox spent as much or more time in Atlanta.
That's
than
right.
With
yeah.
Cubs.
That's exactly right. That's the only reason why he's not on this. This is Cubs career WAR.
Now that counts defense a lot, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Who's I'm going to say who's number one all time? I'm going to guess Babe Ruth, but I'm not sure.
Well, let me look it up.
It's likely to be Mike Trout before all is said and done.
I think it'd definitely be a Yankee.
Well, Mike Trout's never going to hit more home runs than five of the other teams combined.
Babe Ruth is one, all time. Walter Johnson is number two. Cy Young is number three. And the best modern era player of all time is Barry Bonds at number four.
Yeah, I wouldn't surprise.
Willie Mays is number five.
You think Barry was better than Junior?
Yes. Right. But I do think steroids had a lot to do with that.
I'm talking about before he got on the steroids.
He should get the nickname The Juice.
Yeah, he should.
Take that away from OJ.
But he I'm going to temper that. I'm not big on the roid use, but I think
when he started hitting 70 home runs a year and stuff like that.
Right,
when
I'm talking about by the time
like
he
35.
Now, what about guys like, you know, back when home runs weren't that big? But what are guys like Al Kaline and Keith Hernandez and those kinds of people that had all the gold gloves and all the other stuff that went?
Yeah, those guys are good. Like Mark Grace is like the 15th best Cub of all time, and he never hit a lot of home runs. I mean, your other stuff is valued too. You're hitting doubles, you know, all that stuff. Willie Mays, 5th, Ty Cobb, 6th, Hank Aaron, 7th, Roger Clemens, 8th, another cheater. And then, like Honus Wagner, Stan Musial, Rogers Hornsby. Obviously, Ted Williams is 14th, but he missed some of his prime.
Right.
Otherwise, I think he would
Where are guys from the old days, like, where's like Shoeless Joe and Tris Speaker and those guys?
I don't know if, that's good. Lou Gehrig is 18th. Ricky Henderson is 19th. Mickey Mantle's 20th. Tom Seaver's 21st.
How far down do you have to go to find Trout?
Right now?
Yeah. On the all-time list.
That's a good question. Let me look.
Because I'll bet you he's top 100 already.
I will say one stat that all this stuff...
He already has 73 WAR. So he's already better than, like... I think any Cub that we just mentioned.
Well, I mean, he's a hell of a player.
Yeah, no, so he's already passed, yeah, Sandberg and Santo. He's already better than them, according to WAR, right now. And he still has 7 or 8 years left in his career. He'll pass Cap Anson, who is the best Cub of all time.
Where they got Jolton Joe?
DiMaggio?
Yeah.
I'd have to look. I don't have, like, a very user-friendly search list right
well,
now.
One of my, this is a... A stat that I don't think anybody gives a rat's behind. Oh, it's probably in there somewhere, but back in when everybody played the same position every day.
Al Kaline, by the way, is 42nd all time.
Well, because when you were talking about, you know, Schwarber first how many home run, how many games to 100 home runs and so forth. I mean, Ernie Banks came up in September of like 53. In 54 and 55, the guy played 154 games. I mean, he played every single game for a whole year.
Joe DiMaggio was 68th.
And, which, you know, I mean, I don't know what the statistics are, but if you try to match somebody with batting and fielding, I don't know where you'd find somebody too much better than him. I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah, Trout, by the way, is 87th, so Kevin's right. He's already in the top 100.
Well, what I'm saying is what used to astound people about Sano and Grace and a guy way back in the Hall of Fame years was a guy named Tris Speaker. But they all played every day. So one of the statistics that people used to really look at as defensively is they'd look at the amount of chances. Which today is a stat that's gone wobbly because nobody plays the same spot every day. Well, few people do. So you can't really compare it. So they would say that Mark Grace, at the end of the year, because he had so much mobility over there, he would have an average of 15 more chances than anybody else around him, which essentially is equal to a hit every other week, right? Because you're taking one away from somebody.
Yeah, now they actually look at the amount of ground that you cover.
But I mean, same. But
so the chances, it's how well, much ground can you cover compared to anybody else.
But how do you know that?
They track it with cameras.
Okay, but I'm saying we're talking about like Tris Speaker was in center field. He was like 40 chances more than any other center fielder. Like every year he played, so the guy played like 15 feet shallower than anybody else and still could get back on the ball.
Yeah, so that's an indicator. And now you know they have the video proof, and it's all digitized so that it can be computer analyzed, and they can tell you, you know, exactly what's going on there.
Why?
In the case of Mark Grace, though, is there a stat somehow, a factor in there that they could use about catching throws from Sean Dunston?
And doing it while hungover?
And catching girls after the game?
That may be the only way to do it with Sean Dunston. You know, if you got to defend yourself like that, then it helps to not care very much.
I loved Gracie.
Oh, and plus, you know what? There was a guy that Shelly said was very popular with the ladies, and everybody said the guy was a total gentleman. I mean, he was not slapping anybody up or doing anything like that. I mean, he was a gentleman.
He just had a drinking and driving problem.
In Arizona.
That caught him. Well, I'm sure he had it here, too. Here you don't get caught doing stuff like that.
Or here, I bet he never had a drive.
It's easier to grab a cab or whatever. But there, he just kept getting DUIs and had to go to jail.
Yeah. But I mean, you can't go anywhere there without driving. I mean, I don't know what they used to do before you Uber. Well, I do know. They used to go out there a lot. Kevin, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures up 24.50. It's the high so far. NASDAQ Futures up 78. We got the mirror image of yesterday because we've got some, a piece, as it were, in Hong Kong, which is nice to see. We'll be right back with Mr. Russell Rhodes, Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. All of a sudden we hear go from Angelica and Russell. Who's that?
Well, I heard there was a little spat between her and Kevin, and I have to figure out whose side I'm taking in this.
Well, then she turned around and called him David.
I heard that.
S&P futures.
That's really where that came from.
The S&P futures up 81. We're seeing some stuff on the screens about economic policy, and now that you are here, where are your views? We haven't talked about this for a while, and the listeners, I think, probably are somewhat curious. What are your views of the current situation with the Export-Import Bank? Then both parties wanted to get rid of it, and then every time you get in there, it seems like whoever is involved on the thing manages to get money in somebody's back pocket and a thing. It's like the tax benefit for fund managers where it's capital gain even though it's a bonus for them. It never seems to be able to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the $3,000 deductible on your capital gain never seems to go up, even though the market's seven times higher than when I came into the business or whatever, how many times higher.
Well, I've never understood the big justification for trying to mess around with it. It seems to be a pretty good functioning utility, and that's how I would think of it, as a utility.
Well, it's another one of these things. My man is...
I mean, I understand when they go after the financial industry and want to increase some of the taxes, they see money there. But as far as messing around with something that works well, which I think it does work fairly well, for what it's supposed to do.
What's it supposed to do?
Well, they're supposed to help facilitate things going in and out, facilitate the financing of trade going in and out of the U.S.
Okay.
Pretty much. I think that's a good simplification, isn't it?
Without, I'm on this massive rant the last few weeks, continually day by day.
Mm-hmm.
And it has nothing to do with, it has to do with anybody, me included, who lobs one out there without kind of checking their facts. And I think actually when I get down to it and dig it out of you, you know more about what's going on there than I do. That's why I'm asking you. But has anybody who has an opinion on the Export-Import Bank on TV all day long, whenever they talk about it, does anybody ever stick a piece of paper on TV and say, or go to our website, here's the top 50 people that got financed last year, so at least read the damn thing and know what you're talking about before you open your pie hole.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've never seen that, and yet I have an opinion, and obviously you do as well, but does anybody even know who's getting this money?
The big projects have been few and far between. It helped, and you can question whether it worked well or not, but it actually tried to assist the Soviet Union when they collapsed and turned into a pseudo democracy. That's one of the things they reached out and did. There's some other things that they've done with lesser countries, but it's one of the ways that we try to maybe prop some things up around the world that could come around and haunt us at some point.
I believe that the mechanism, and this is why I'm on this, and by the way, I happen to agree with you that if it's, in fact,
there's a way that you can show that it actually makes money for the U.S. government, which that's something we must get rid of.
No, what I'm saying is here's the way I think it worked, and here's the way I think it's been abused.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously I welcome your opinion. When I was at Pullman, not at the Railcar Corporation, Robin, who's been on the show with us, Robin Spitalny, was the assistant treasurer of Pullman Incorporated. And at the time, Kellogg Brown and Root, Kellogg was part of Pullman. And so was Pullman Swindell, which built, you and I would say chimneys, but don't say chimneys in a room of experts, they're stacks.
Mm-hmm.
If you call it a chimney, you're a schlump, basically. So you and I would be schlumps, because we've already called it a chimney twice. It's a stack. But anyway, Kellogg essentially engineered refineries and things like that around the world. I mean, it's a huge company. And what Pullman would do is if there was a refinery going up, say, in Saudi Arabia or someplace, or Oman, Robin and other people from Kellogg, not just her, they would go to the Export-Import Bank and say Oman couldn't pay for the thing. But now the refinery was going to have its own income. All right. Obviously, we're talking about something that it's like building the Golden Gate Bridge and charging $5 to go across. I mean, it's going to have its own income. So they would get money, not all the financing, but the Export-Import Bank, they'd get financing from other places, obviously some from maybe the government over there or whatever, and they would fill in the gap. And essentially, part of the deal was we'd have our engineering firms, some of our construction guys, Mortensen Knutsen was part of it a lot of times, and our guys would go over there and we'd get a foothold. Okay, but then the first thing the refinery did, the first monies paid back, were on these loans back to the export. So we essentially were making industry in another place to which we were getting paid by and the interest from the place. Now, if a dictator took over and said, screw you guys, I guess we're out of luck. But by and large, there was a reason to do this. It was an income thing. It was business going forward for Kellogg, probably business going forward for anybody who constructed it, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I really would be with you in a sense that this is a win-win-win-win, even though I hate like hell to use that term.
Yeah.
But I think as time went by, it became Boeing's cash cow.
There are a couple of big companies that benefited, and Boeing was definitely one of them. But
it came into them buying warplanes with no income there. There's no income to come back. They're buying, F-14s weren't Boeing, but they're buying whatever, an F-35. Now, we're going to lend some third world place a bunch of money to buy F-35s from Boeing. And F-35s go and sit in a hangar. There's no income to them. There's no business development there. I mean, it's to me, from what I've heard,
there's no income stream to cover the loan. That's what you're
doing. Well, we're also not getting really a foot. We're just selling people stuff to kill other people. Maybe even ourselves if we were on the wrong side of war with the guys.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just not the same. Now, I don't know that we need to send, armaments to places that can't afford it on our taxpayers' dime just so Boeing can get the trade. I mean, I, in other words, I think, well, before we say we like it or we don't like it, we got to find out who the hell's running it and who they're giving the loans to.
Well, they got the big criticism was that Boeing was the biggest beneficiary of it back actually during the Obama administration.
Oh, no doubt.
But, I guess they're a Chicago company, aren't they?
Well, they got their office here.
They've got a building where they protest in front of every once in a while. But, you know, this one's going to blow, knock your socks off. But I've been digging into the government's role in venture capital type of situations, and I'm starting to accept an argument that there is a place for government entities in venture capital for things that are longer than 3 to 5 year projects. And I feel like the Export-Import Bank is an entity that could do a good job with those sorts of things.
It all comes down to management.
Yeah.
If it's just one company just then selling war plays, I say close it up tomorrow. If they're doing the stuff like they're doing for Pullman, I say go get them, girl.
Yeah, and I think a lot of what they still do is for things like small and mid-sized companies that are trying to get trying to expand internationally. But because the size of that business compared to selling 10 F-14s or whatever to Oman, is that a country?
Yeah.
On a dollar basis, it probably, you know, the value to a mid-sized company is about the same as half a plane. So when you start to break the numbers out like that, it looks like they're just supporting Boeing. And I don't really, and this is where you and I are going to differ on it, but I don't really mind them supporting Boeing because, yeah, Boeing's biggest competitor is a consortium, is basically propped up by a consortium of governments in Airbus.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I feel like that's an entity that can help level the playing field to a certain point.
The idea that their guy's subsidizing more than our guy, boy, you'll never
win. I don't know if they do more or not.
Yeah, you'll never win that battle.
Yeah, but the fact that they've got to go head-to-head with an entity that has the de facto backing of a government, we're going to need to do the same thing on our end.
Or they're doing it because we did it before them.
Well,
this is like the Irish.
It doesn't really matter how it started. We're at right now.
This is like trying to figure out who shot the first one, Hatfield or McCoy.
My life moves one direction, and it would be forward.
Yes.
Don Draper.
Yes. I don't disagree with that. but this can get insidious because we've got a problem with the F-35. Okay, the thing's too damn expensive.
Uh-huh.
Because it's being built in 48 plants in 48 different states, so everybody got a piece of it, right?
Yeah.
Sort of thing is a disaster, money-wise. It has been since day one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the ways they dropped the price, okay, so that it was palatable to the American people, otherwise, even the American people, as dumb as we can be collectively, would say, what the hell, it's an awful expensive plane. They said, okay, if we sell some to these people overseas that maybe don't even want the damn thing, now, that will drop the price per plane down because the R&D piece now is amortized over more. Well, that's fine, but outer Mondavi can't afford the plane. That's okay. We'll lend them the money so they can buy the plane. So it looks like we're paying cheaper because we're buying an extra one and giving it to somebody else. When you start getting that level of intrigue, Russell, I got to believe even you would like to get out handcuffed someplace.
Yeah.
Because I think that's where we are with this thing.
Well, again, I support Boeing. We need Boeing. We
need only Boeing?
No. Well, Boeing's all we got. Everything consolidated to a point of where those are the guys we need. You know, that's unfortunately people we're stuck with.
Well, you just said, and you're going to regret you said it.
No, I'm not. I never regret anything.
You
I
said
say,
something about.
I just move forward.
You said something about the, the government may be having to help people finance things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we're getting into this, in my opinion, very fascist, even though the conservatives keep lobbing the socialist term at the Democrats, and most people lobbing that term couldn't define it if their life depended on it. But let's say, in my opinion, a lot of our industries now are very fascist, which is four companies with their nose up the ass of government. That's
mm-hmm.
Now, if, for instance, you and I actually wanted. If we got a new drug for cancer, a new drug for something, and we had Chief and Russell Drug Enterprises, not selling dope on the street, some real drugs. I'm not sure that since Merck and Pfizer can borrow, thanks to our government, at probably 2-3% and buy us out, but for us to borrow the money to take it through the FDA, I'm going to say it's probably 8% or 7.
At least. Yeah, because of the high risk.
Because the banking system doesn't, well, whatever.
Well, they don't lend, but also it those things are such a crapshoot.
Well, whether we should be paying 8 mm-hmm. is one issue. Whether they should be paying 3 is yet another. But I'm saying the spread there is too high. So mm-hmm. maybe there needs to be a place where the government says for people that are trying to build, say, the MRI place where you're going to charge people $600 for an MRI instead of $6,000, that the hospitals will have those sphincter will grab tight when they hear that happen. The fact is the government may have to come in financing to allow things to become more competitive because you're not going to get it out of the current system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's what you're talking about.
Partially.
Kind of an expanded FDA one.
I think that's an extension of where we are right now because the banks aren't doing the job that they're supposed to do.
Well, right now, if you want to open up an airline.
But in general, I think for longer term projects that are going to benefit, a good example is the internet. The internet got created for academic purposes more than anything else.
By Al Gore.
Or at least once it got out of the military area. But, that technology wouldn't have been built up without government investment. And then you can argue this one, but it has bettered our lives across the board.
Right. And I'm not so sure it should have been given away as cheaply as it was.
I shouldn't have given it away at all. Should have kept control of it. We created it. It was ours. We shouldn't have given it away. Period.
But what I'm saying, I wonder if you look at, for instance, the last two or three presidents slap lips together a million times regarding small business as the backbone of the country. And yet I'm going to say all 3 to 4 of the last presidents have had policy that absolutely excoriate small businesses.
Because that's not where their money comes from.
No. So what I'm saying is for that to happen, I almost think that a government has to be the direct lender because the banking system's not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And if the banking system has such a dramatic... If you can access the banking system where people can get $250,000 insurance, essentially at a ridiculously low price. If you can access the banking system, your rates are always going to be less than people like you and I that have to go to LendingTree or knackemknee.com. That's a massive difference. And we've had the guest on from the guy who replaced Joel for the one day. Joel was out of town. He said Detroit, if a small business wants a loan, they don't go near a bank. They go to these places online. Well,
yeah.
How is it that they can compete effectively with a system that gets FDIC, gets all this other stuff? I mean, either the regulations are so high that they're costing them too much, which is an abortion if that's what's happening, or they're just paying themselves for the month and they don't need it because they're paying the other guys, and the Fed's giving them money overnight. Either way, the system is screwed up, in my mind.
Oh, most definitely.
I think what you're saying is somehow or another, but again, Russell, even if I agreed with you, which I do, by the way, which you're not supposed to on radio, who the hell's going to? I mean, who's going to manage it? It's all about management. I mean, is the right person getting the loan? If you and I say, look, it looks to us like the airplane flights out of Cincinnati, which is not the same now because I think Southwest goes there, are ridiculously more expensive than any other place. Now, what if we want to drop an airline in Cincinnati, a regional carrier, where we're going to fly to Chicago for people to connect to New York? We're going to go 3 different places. Now, is the federal government going to, grab us by the neck and not let it happen? Well, hey, guys, there's no landing slots for you. What do you mean?
They ain't going to make it easy.
There's no landing slots. By the way, there's no gates. What do you mean? There's 12 gates there. They've never been used. By the way, they're landing slots. I don't see anybody in the sky. It's 2 in the afternoon. Why can't I come in now? Oh, no, they're all taken. Well, what do you mean taken? Other guys got them because, well, how did they not use them? Well, that's okay. They don't have to. I mean, if you got to go through this whole mess, they might as well be, government companies. Now, they're either going to help somebody compete or stop somebody from competing. And what you're saying is they maybe need to start helping people compete. And I don't know that that's right now by word and deed. I mean, you think a small brokerage firm gets a fair shake against Charles Schwab or Lafferty?
Oh, absolutely not.
No. I mean,
no, there's the reason that the U.S. is dominated by 2 or 3 big companies in pretty much every industry is because It's, you know, the synergies, without government at all involved, the synergies make it very difficult to compete. But your influence over the rules, once you reach that size, have an awful lot to do with your success as well.
Well, but there, if you look at...
It's part of your competitive advantage.
But say, for instance, and that's why people before we were born made laws against this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you owned a huge hamburger joint in some town where there's, you know, 5,000-6,000 people, and I own the other hamburger joint, and we're competing, or maybe there's three of us, if I all of a sudden were to buy you out, there's a price that of which your hamburger place or mine, there's a price that it's worth on the open market.
Yeah.
The only person it's worth more to is the other one of us.
Yeah.
Because we can actually, even if it's the short term, we can put the other person out of business and raise prices.
Right.
And we can, but you can always say to the shareholders, we're going to pay a 10% premium, so they're, quote, happy. That's the capitalist system. You can take the chairman of the place and give him a bonus of which he doesn't deserve and beyond the dreams of avarice, so he's happy. So in theory, all these people are, quote, happy. Yet the person who's on the fence, getting off the fence last, is the people now that are trying to buy a hamburger.
And the really small burger shack place that was between those two that was a local favorite that
right.
is now going to get priced out.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
so it goes for,
now the question is the city going to make it worse where somebody says, hey, there's a hole in this town, there needs to be another hamburger place, and they're not going to let us get a permit, they're not going to let us do this, they're not going to let us, they're going to grandfather the other guy in. Are they going to make it
or even better, they're going to rent the only spaces that people could use for it and maybe not even put a burger place there.
Right. And yes. So I mean, are they going to help? They're going to hurt? They're going to do nothing? Mm-hmm. But clearly, when a big, like a big drug company buys another one, it's to raise, there's not that much. When you start talking about thousands and thousands of employees, there's not that much synergy in laying people off. You can give the other people a buyout, but really it's to raise the prices.
Yeah.
And just because the shareholders are happy and the executives are happy, I mean, look at some of the people we've seen in some of the exchanges. The only thing they did, there was a guy, the Board of Trade eventually, he was not the chairman when the place was sold to the Merck, CME.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a guy like two chairmans before that, and I was close to the action in those days. His contract when he came in was that they put a price there, like per share.
Mm-hmm.
And any number he got over the price, he got something like 20 or 25% of the total nut.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there going, the guy telling me this was, the thing's been here since 1865. Before that.
Yeah.
Well, it opened the same year that the canal opened. So it's within 5 years of that.
Yeah.
What out of all the people that have worked for 150 years to make the Board of Trade what it is today, what gave this guy who just showed up 25% of the place?
You know, he showed up and he was in the right place at the right time.
Well, but he also, all he did was try and sell it.
Mm-hmm.
For the year or two he was there, and they bleeped.
That's what they brought him in to do.
But then they
I've forgotten the guy's name, but I think that's what they.
But you know what?
Then they
booted
him. They were falling behind the CME group.
But then they booted him. They booted him.
Yeah.
So he never got part of that because he didn't do a very good job running it or doing that. He didn't sell it or run it.
He couldn't do either things.
Evidently not. Okay. But I'm saying, is that what you want to have happen in a place? I think we'd probably be better off if they were still apart competing.
You think so?
Well, why
How
not?
Come?
Because you wouldn't have somebody right now. The only thing they do, since they're essentially a monopoly, is they raise the prices on the feeds. Costs $350 for somebody to have a machine now. You get all the feeds in that place.
Mm-hmm.
Why not make it 5,000? I mean,
what could you know who's going to stop them is the government.
No, well, they're not even stopping them now. They should say that's not how you guys make your money. I mean, why does that become your property?
Why is the data your property?
Yeah, I mean, we gave you the place, we gave you the monopoly.
Because they've got the machines and they're the place that everybody goes to trade.
What I'm saying,
because they're the only game in town.
I understand it, but when you were created by the government and given a franchise, then now you've got government just like railroads.
I don't. CME wasn't created by the government, but
they were
allowed to turn into pretty much a monopoly in the space there.
Well, the CBOE was given a monopoly on options. You guys get to do them. Okay, same thing.
Oh, you mean the monopoly on SPX options?
No, I'm talking about in the get-go. They were
right off the bat. And this in is 73.
Yeah, they got dramatic changes in margin difference than other people. They got a list of advantages and a list of things they were supposed to do. Regulatory and stuff, do this, do that.
It created a whole industry.
Yeah. Not saying it didn't.
16 exchanges now.
Which is probably a bad thing, but that's another.
I can argue both sides of.
Well,
no, you just said that CME and the Board of Trade should be separate. Which is what we have in the equity and index options space.
Competing for new products and things is not the same as creating a place where you can preference order flow and get paid.
Well,
that's a big difference.
It keeps the cost of trading extremely low for individuals and everybody else.
Except that every single trade is being the money just flipped to the back end. They think it's cheap, but it's not.
They don't realize how the brokerage firms are getting paid. I know that for a fact from going to retail.
We both know that. SP futures up 26. SP futures up 78. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call, 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Russell Rhodes. S&P futures up 26.50. We're, like I said, we're flipping the mirror image from yesterday. NASDAQ futures up 82. Dow futures up 224. Again, the big issue this morning, not issue, the big good news is that the Hong Kong leader, Carrie Lam, says extradition bill has been fully withdrawn. That's obviously a good thing. So,
she also said she'd quit if she could.
Yeah.
Which I would do if I were her.
Well, I don't, you know, she, I don't know why she brought the thing forward. She must have been really influenced.
I think that she was told to bring the thing forward.
I would say
we'll, we'll talk about what I've witnessed on the ground there after we do all this stuff.
DAX up 129 on its 1.1%. FTSE up 24. Lagging because they are back into an alligator nest over there with, first of the dude went to the Queen to get, Parliament to stand down for 3 weeks. And Parliament came down and they jumped him and like beat him up as he came in the door. So they're talking about a new vote, a new everything. So it's not good. CAC up 63. That's 1.1% over in Asia. Kind of interesting. The Nikkei up only 23, so that's flat. Shanghai up 27. That's a full 1%. Hang Seng, however, as you might guess, up 995. That's almost 1,000 points. Duh.
How do we short that?
I don't think you wanted to short it last night. That's almost 4%.
No, now.
Yeah, now. 10-year, 1.49. This is interesting. The Bund, which made it down 0.71 last Friday, is now back up to 0.64. So they're a little less negative than they were. Japan minus 0.29. Oil rallying today. $1.17, 55.11. God, my ex-leave. Finally, the dead thing has been like, talk about a rat's behind. That thing needs to come up some. I still have people in that, and I keep thinking, I don't want to sell it down here, Russell, but the oil service industries are, God, they're getting clobbered. Brent up 115. Natural gas unchanged at 236. RBOB 149. Wow, that was over $2 a few months ago, right? We've got gold down today. That's for a big, well, it was only down 780. It was more earlier. 1548 gold or silver up another 25 cents, 1949. Unbelievable. Copper up 3 cents, 255. What do you guys got? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. For the most part, folks are behaving themselves on the area expressways. We have traffic building up on the Edens and Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways have looked good all morning. Same for the suburban tollways, so that's good news. That earlier crash that was blocking a lower Columbus is all clear downtown, so that's good news, too. Only significant issue in the area right now, northwestern suburbs, Beesterfield Road at I-290, right at Route 53 there, there is a crash that is causing some delays as folks are getting off and on I-290 at Route 53. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be much cooler and less humid than it was yesterday. A high of just 67, but it'll be sunny and dry. Right now it's crystal clear and 64 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 111 today. Right now it's clear and 90. In sports, Cubs won again, beating the Mariners at home last night 6-1. Unfortunately, though, the Cardinals keep winning too, so the Cubs remain three games behind St. Louis for the lead in the NL Central. About 25 games or so to play to decide that one, but they do play each other seven times. Four at Wrigley, three down in St. Louis, so it's going to come right down to the end, I would imagine.
It's the last weekend of the season, right?
Yeah, they close with three in St. Louis. White Sox came from 5-2 down to top the Indians 6-5 in Cleveland last night. Diamondbacks doubled up the Padres 2-1. Of course, the NFL season kicks off tomorrow, Bears versus Packers at Soldier Field. Trey Burton, Bears tight end, who was a big miss in the playoffs last year due to injury, is a game-time decision for tomorrow. Everyone else is expected to play.
Chief. Here it says here that your man was so pissed off at the Chinese for retaliating, he almost doubled tariffs.
Double down.
Screw those guys. Mm-hmm. Hey, before
he's
we
gotta build a wall in the Pacific Ocean to keep them out.
That's right. We're submarine nets under it. Hey, real quick, before we get into the Hong Kong thing, which I'm dying to hear. Yesterday I was talking about these, here's a list of, this is from Maggie Fitzgerald from CNBC News. Here's a list of recession signals that are flashing red. And I'll just go through them real quick. And which, as a economist and a professor, which ones of these do you care about? One is interest rates are going down where they are. The other is the inverted yield curve. Then they've got GDP slowing. They've got corporate profits slowing. They've got manufacturing PMI. Manufacturing yesterday, the supply one was down, right, as well, the PMI mm-hmm. for the first time. The Cass Freight Index, which has been down like 5 or 6% 3 months in a row. Did any of those, and then copper prices way down or up a little bit this morning. Did any of those come up and say this is the one I look at or I like two or three?
The two interest rate ones for sure, which I think everybody does, especially the inverted yield curve, and that's because those are based on people's expectations and people actually trading in the markets. And then the copper one, I've always felt like copper, and I actually did a paper a long time ago about how Phelps Dodge stock performance was an excellent indicator with respect to a leading indicator with respect to slowdowns. So the bookends of your list, the interest, really? Especially the interest rate ones, because the other numbers, the economic numbers that you cited are backward looking. I think they're more of confirming that it's been going on when those other markets and, the yield curve in a certain way inverted a couple of months ago. Whereas those things are giving you more of a real time signal.
There were dudes, back in the day when I don't even know, is the thing even published? Business Week? It must be. It still at the stands, doesn't it?
I think it's Bloomberg Business Week now.
Okay.
But they still do have a hard copy magazine.
But there were people that couldn't wait to get that thing, and the first thing they did was look at inside of the front cover was rail car loadings.
Oh, yeah. I worked at a hedge fund where we actually employed somebody out in the Silicon Valley to count rail cars coming out of a couple of certain areas.
Really?
To keep up with the amount of technology that was coming out.
I would have guessed that stuff coming out of Silicon Valley was almost all trucked.
Some of it, I think, was going to... where's that? And you'll know this probably right off the top of your head. Where's that place in Nebraska where the trains split off to go to the northern east coast or the southern east coast? Or
well, everything...
It's kind of like everything feeds into the middle.
Everything's got to come through Chicago. You can't come north of here.
No, there's a place where a lot of rail traffic comes in and they split them all off and they go in different directions toward the east.
I'm going to say that place is Chicago.
No, it's not.
Well, I'll there's only a couple of lines from here in Nebraska, so how do you split them off already?
It's somewhere like that. Now I've got to use the Google later right, and try to not, talk at the same time.
Why do you think Chicago is a city it is? Because you had to come through
here. Well, I know that rail traffic comes through here as well, but there's... It's like in Nebraska or Oklahoma or one of those.
The only place that you can go differently is if you go to Kansas City. Kansas City, it's actually the is it the Monon line? No, it's the Wabash line. They had a direct line from Detroit to Kansas City that did not come through Chicago, and that's one of the reasons why the Oldsmobile plant was built in Kansas City and a bunch of other places. It gave them a massive. They could ship cars without coming through Chicago. And they had, I think, maybe Ford had a plant downtown, I'm not positive, but Kansas City was pretty big on car manufacturing because there was a direct line through central Illinois to Detroit. It didn't have to come through here. So if any place, it would be Kansas City because you can bypass Chicago.
I'll find it. It's the middle of nowhere.
All right.
I promise it's the middle of nowhere.
Talk about Hong Kong a bit.
Hong Kong, SIBO would send me there every year for about 2 to 3 weeks. I'd leave the day after Thanksgiving. I'd come home in the middle of December. That was kind of my year-end trip for them. And over the 5 years that I went there, every year, Hong Kong was becoming more and more Chinese. Hong Kong, the primary language was English when I first started going over there, and Mandarin or Cantonese, I can't ever keep track of which one is which in the northern and southern part of China, but that started to take over as the primary language.
I think Cantonese is south, but don't hold me to that.
I think it is Mandarin, but I went from cab drivers that I could fully communicate with to cab drivers that didn't speak a lick of English. I went from going to McDonald's and using the kiosk because the people always mess up my order, but going and using the kiosk and having the kiosk you know, in English to it switching over to being in Mandarin and me having to hit a couple of extra buttons to switch it over. And what there has been is there has been this slow creep where inch by inch China is taking over the way of life in Hong Kong. And my impression from having been there several times is this extradition law was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back. Everybody, they saw this coming and they're like, all right, well, it's small stuff, it's small stuff. And then it's, you know, it's suddenly, boom, they're really going to impose their legal will upon us. You see the same thing going on with Taiwan. A couple of years ago, and I know I'll mess this up, but a couple of years ago, the mainland China said if airlines continued to refer to Taiwan as Taiwan instead of Chinese Taipei, they couldn't fly in and out of China anymore. And they all just kind of relented and said, well, that's not a big deal. But they're doing small things like that, and they play a much longer game than we do. It's one of the weak parts of Trump's hand when he's playing this tariff game is that they're looking beyond every 2 to 4 years, whereas we always seem to be on a 2 to 4 year cycle. But from what I've seen in Hong Kong is, every year I go, it's becoming more and more Chinese.
That's interesting. Well, I mean, let me ask you another question.
It's a smart way to do it.
What was supposed to happen? Why would, we're talking about 1999, right?
They were supposed to allow them to be autonomous, but they've, in order to run for office in Hong Kong, you basically have to be approved by Beijing. So Beijing lets you vote on all of their choices to run the place.
So that's why this lady said, if I could quit, I would.
Yep. When she said that, I was like, I can totally see her being stuck in this situation right now. And she really is stuck between a rock and a hard place. I'm sure that the second people started to protest over this extradition thing, which basically means that people in Hong Kong can't criticize the government in Beijing without the fear of being disappeared.
Disappeared's always a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't like when that happens. But instead of being, you know, pulled over to the legal system in mainland China, I severely doubt that she woke up one day and said, "Hey, this is a good idea. Let's come up with this."
Do they have the Stalin thing going?
What do you mean? Where they just randomly?
No, if somebody disappears, they scrub them out of history and never existed.
Oh, like the cosmonauts, that they had a group photo and then all of a sudden it was awkward because three or four of them were just missing and we never heard what happened to them. They died in space flight. But
remember our friend Kathy, we were talking about this on here one day, Kathy Durbin, and somehow she goes on the internet, of course.
Uh-huh.
At one point I was reading about this, and Stalin had 250 people, roughly, best photographers, the best artists he could find. And people that were good at literature.
Uh-huh.
So if we rubbed out Russell, of course, the name on the door or the lock or wherever you have at Loyola where you teach, mm-hmm, would be gone. Not only would we take it out of the faculty guide this year, we'd take it out of the ones from years ago. So there would be no record of you ever being at Loyola.
Yeah.
We would take it off. I don't know how you could take it off individual people's report cards, but we would do whatever. So she sends me a couple of these pictures. If they weren't so scary, they were a riot. There's Stalin with his arm around some guy. There's, uh-huh, four people get a picture taken on his bridge, you know, over a river, obviously. And one guy's got, he's leaning on the bridge banister. And there's Stalin with his arm around him and then the arm around the guy next to him. The next picture, the guy between him and the banister is gone.
Poof.
And they show Stalin standing right next to the banister. I mean, it was amazingly well done how they pulled the thing out of there and just moved the dude over.
So
she sends me about eight of these things. But, I mean, if you're talking about a general, I mean, you got to scrub an awful lot for the guy going through the military schools and, mm-hmm, this and that. I mean, where you'd walk in and they'd say, well, where's General Rhodes? Not only was he here, he was never here. What do you mean he was never here? I don't see anything that said he was here.
Who? I don't remember that guy.
So I wonder if they're going down the same road or if somebody disappears, they're like, who?
Yeah,
who?
No, they've been disappearing people for a while. In mainland, it continues to happen in mainland China. Some people think that there's actually the population differs greatly from what they report because of some of the things that they do internally to the population.
Well, you mean you think they've iced that many?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like a million people.
I think it's a lot more. I think a lot more than that.
Well, how many?
I think internally, how many did
Mao knock off in the Cultural Revolution?
Oh gosh, 3 million?
Something like that. Yeah.
And then they starved tens of millions.
Yeah.
When economically things weren't working.
Well,
they've gotten more and more hardcore. And they seem to be persecuting more and more people that maybe are Christians. Definitely the Muslim population, which comes from the interior of China. There are reports that they've been sending a lot of people to re-education camps partially because of a fear of terrorism, but also if they're not thinking of the state as being the number one thing out there.
Well, yeah, I guess.
It's a strictly controlled society. When I've done, maybe they won't ever let me back in China after this. But I've been there, I can tell somebody's watching what I'm doing on my computer because it moves in slow motion. Like I go to that, you can get Yahoo email, you can't get Gmail over there. Going to my Yahoo email, I try to log on once, doesn't let me in. Then I log and then do the exact same thing. It works. I felt like typing hi to whoever was watching me.
Maybe you should. There probably are people that your picture would show up and you waving at them or flipping them off.
No.
Waving at them is okay. It probably wouldn't like if you.
I don't want to be disappeared.
No, we would miss you.
You know, like a year from now, it's going to be like, whatever happened to Russell?
I miss you. What about your family?
And there'd be like 15 iced coffees stacked up over here.
Yeah, where the hell is he?
Yeah. I think two of the three people in my family would miss me.
What about the dog?
One dog would definitely miss me. My dog would miss me.
The other one, not so much?
The other two, no, not so much.
God. I was talking to an attorney buddy of mine at this. We had this big business meeting, and I wasn't part of the whole meeting. So anyways, the attorney guy I'm talking to, when he was a couple weeks ago, he's telling me, you know, I got the wife, two daughters, and then I got this female dog, and the dog is not all that well trained, and they basically got together and had a meeting and said, well, Dad, if it comes between you and the dog, you know, you're the one that's out. So he's absolutely bombarded by the four females if you count the dog, and he goes, I got no chances.
Sometimes I feel like I'm every time we get a new dog, I fall down the totem pole a little bit.
God. Well, I can only imagine if Audrey ever got like a horse or two. She loves horses. I'd never see her. She'd be over there. Whatever, but the thing I have with this China situation is, mm-hmm. I've felt this way the whole way with these guys. I tell people every day. You know, my mother's cousin went over there back after Kissinger, and they wanted to buy all their mining equipment, one of each, and he wouldn't sell them to them. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's been no question that this has been, the history of this to me is an incredible history of politics.
Yeah,
I mean, and economics. I mean, And I honestly don't know if most people would have done any different, I mean, Trump included. I mean, you sit there and you're in the Oval Office and somebody walks in and says, this is BS. You know, they've got 500 million computers over there, and they bought, you know, two pieces of Microsoft software, and guess what? They've copied it all over the damn place. You know, which is true. I mean, I'm exaggerating.
Yeah, no, they have.
There's no doubt that every Beatles, album was available over there, and they didn't pay any. I mean,
yeah.
I doubt if they. So I mean, this has been going on for like ever,
right?
Okay, and then all of a sudden, just when you pound your chair and your fist on the Oval Office desk, and you say, "This is bull! I got to do something about this." All of a sudden, the guy from Coke runs in and says, "Wait a minute!
We're selling a lot of Coca-Cola.
There's a billion people over there, and they're all drinking
a
Coke a day. What are you doing? This is fine." So I mean, it's been so uneven to everybody here. That I think, like most of the time, the people that are doing well over there have more money than the people that aren't, and they get the stuff somebody's back pocket.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can maybe attest to this, Kentucky Fried Chicken, there's more pictures of,
there's KFC everywhere over there. Yeah.
More than Mao. You know, so I mean,
that used to be how you would figure out how the Chinese economy was doing. You'd just look at the Yum Brand's earnings and see how the KFC China division was doing. That's better insight economically than anything they tell you.
Yeah, and I guess what I'm saying is, this has been an issue ongoing, and it's been one we've had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my biggest problem with. There's a lady, one of the things, and we only have a few minutes, which I'm sad about because, well, we got it off the time.
Mm-hmm.
But there was an article last week, and I think I got it like on Thursday. Was a CNBC, I listened to her interview, and it was an article that came with it. And she was talking about the structure of society is falling apart, internationally and even domestically. And the reason why she said it, she goes, people do not understand.
Mm-hmm.
Like when the Japanese, the example she used, the Japanese and the South Koreans. She goes, there's a lot of hate there.
Yeah.
I mean, legitimately, because
yeah.
the Japanese
yeah.
were not very nice. And to China or those guys or whoever they conquered. I mean, they were, in a lot of ways, very, very Hitler-esque. And a matter of fact, but I think they were worse, in terms of people killed. But you never really know. But her point was, it's sort of like having a neighbor that you can't stand and you're never going to stand. But there's one tree that's on other people you're fighting over, and you say, look, for purposes of this tree, let's at least agree to not fight about the tree anymore.
Yeah.
And I guess you could look at SALT I. You could look at all these kinds of, treaties that essentially were the first step in not liking the other person, not marrying them, not giving them a back rub. We're talking about at least being able to coexist.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, when all this breaks out, even at that level, to where, okay, we're not going to have this little treaty anymore between Japan and South Korea. Well, by the way, did I remind you guys lately how much I hated you guys? That type of thing. when you start going backward.
Yeah.
She said and this is what, where I think her shot was against Trump, is that even if you have, I would guess that you and I would go through, if we read the SALT I agreement, we'd say, what the hell kind of agreement was this? Where both sides are talking I'm going to guess that they were missiles that had already rusted out, would never run again, you could never send them up in the air,
yeah.
but it was a start, right? And then it became SALT II. But the idea that we don't want any agreement that's not our side, that everything's bilateral, I think is a really flawed. I'm going to say that I don't like what the Chinese have done more than Trump. And yet I think it's very flawed the way he's going about it. I would come at this end and say, here's 400 things. You don't give these people the plans to this, or you're going to jail. Well, oh, by the way,
do it on our end?
On our end. And say, okay. By the way, nobody gets to buy from China gets to buy more than 49% of the place here, just like they do to us. And why do we have Chinese people coming to the University of Illinois paying more tuition and squeezing our kids out? Why do we have people coming from there on HB1 visas, making 50 grand as a PhD in some firm? It's slave labor. When our guys could demand 70, now those people can't go from place to place. Why do we have all this stuff still working? If you really believe that way, start chipping away at the stuff that's an advantage to them. Don't just have this huge thing where you tariff everybody and screw everybody in the country. What does that do?
So you think trying to get it from our end?
Yeah. If I don't want you having the plans for the Boeing 737, well, I'm telling Boeing. I'm not telling you not to ask for it.
Well, if you do it from our end, what pressure does that put on the Chinese?
Well, if we don't want Hitler
you're
to have
trying to get their behavioral change.
If we don't want Hitler to have the plans of a P-51 Mustang, do you ask Hitler to not ask for it, or do you tell whoever built the damn thing to say don't give it to him?
You tell whoever built the thing don't give it to him. But you're talking about a huge market, and you're talking about
then don't do anything.
Remain globally competitive.
Right, then don't do anything. Don't say they're a massive enemy, and then still want to. Everybody who trades over there still trades there, and all the stuff that people are making money, you still get to do it. I mean, you're either in or you're out. I mean, he's the one who called it a war. I didn't.
It is a war.
Okay, well, it's a war. You don't have people here selling bullets to the Germans if it's a war.
Right. Well. We're making it. They're buying less of our stuff right now. But the way that we're really going to hurt them is by making their stuff less competitive.
I'm saying,
here,
if we're worried about what you're talking about, making you and I pay more if we still had little kids, may pay 50% more for a little kid's swimming pool is not cutting it.
I mean, but you're saying that the way for us to get the Chinese to quit being bad actors on the world stage is to not allow our companies to do business with them.
No, what I'm saying is, if we can't buy a place over there without them owning 51% of it, mm-hmm. they can't buy a place here without us owning 51% of it. What's wrong with that?
I don't think we let them buy anything sensitive anyway.
a couple things we don't, but I mean, I think they bought a lot of stuff.
I mean, they wanted to buy the Chicago Stock Exchange, and they blocked that very quickly because we didn't want them to have access to our financial industry.
I'll bet if you had a list of all the stuff they bought here, you'd be stunned in the last 15 years.
I don't think there's that many sensitive things that we've allowed them to buy.
Well, okay, but I'm saying if that's where they want to go.
Through partnerships.
Yeah, through, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I kind of like, nobody else can hear her, but I kind of like how she's put her foot down and said.
Where do you suppose she comes from?
I'm assuming Beverly.
Oh, God.
She's going to call me something worse than David.
NASDAQ futures up 74. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.